Hello and welcome to the podcast series looking at the research that's being undertaken by postgraduate students in the Geography Department in Maynooth. So these are all students who have taken the MA in Spatial Justice module. And the students are drawn from different disciplines. So some are sociology, anthropology, media studies, but some are from the MA in Spatial Justice, including our guest today, who is Isabel Fitzgerald. And Isabel's work has been inspired, I think, by the field trip that the class did to Leitrim, where you were looking at, I guess, different qu questions of spatial justice, but particularly the expansion of Sitka spruce plantations. And in your work, you make an interesting connection between what's going on there and the kind of resistance to it and this key concept of slow violence that we've looked at in the class and through the reading of Rob Nixon's work. So it's great to have you, Isabel.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and how we start usually is I just ask you to introduce yourself a little bit to the listeners and say something about how you got interested in the topic to begin with.
So, hi everyone listening. My name is Isabel, as Patrick said, I'm doing the MA in Geography, and my topic that I'm going to be talking about today is slow violence with regard to afforestation in Leitrim. So my own thesis research is really different to what I'm going to be talking about today. So I am doing research on the psychogeographies of urban public space in Cork City. So my main research interests are human, urban, and social geography. So I first became interested in afforestation in Leitrim when I took the public engagement module with Louise Fitzgerald at the department here in Maynooth, where we are currently doing a group project producing an information brochure for the group Save Leitrim. This was the first time I'd been introduced to this topic. I'd never been to Leitrim before. I'd never heard anything about the issues with forestation there. And I kind of wanted to challenge myself and learn something new. I hadn't studied anything to do with spatial justice or afforestation in my undergraduate, where I did BA Geography and Politics in UCC. And I just wanted to learn something new and learn a lot more about environmental issues, because I feel as a human geographer, and obviously because my own interests are kind of cities, you don't really learn too much about climate change and things like that. So I just wanted to learn more, and I became interested in it from Louise's class, and then obviously with spatial justice, when we went on the field trip, I was kind of coming at it from two perspectives, like the two classes, and the field trip which we did a few weeks ago just had a big impact on me. It was, I think there was about 10 to 12 students, and it was all our first time in Leitrim, and it just really struck me what was going on there, and so I decided to link what I had read in our spatial justice readings to what I saw in Leitrim.
Great, thanks for that. And I'm glad to hear that, Louise's class was, a real inspiration too, and that idea of public engagement and the work you're doing, which is kind of in service or in support of the Save Leitrim campaign, I think is really, really valuable. Maybe we can talk about that at the end. But
Definitely.
one place that we could start, or I like to start, is introducing listeners to some key concepts that we look at in the spatial justice module. And there's two that you use in your essay and work that I think are, particularly interesting. And I was wondering if you could maybe just give a brief overview or introduction to them, talk about where they came from and, why you find them useful to think with. So those two key concepts, as we've already said, one of them is slow violence, and then the other one, which is a kind of, I'd say, an allied concept or related concept, is sacrifice zones. So maybe you could talk about slow violence first and then, yeah, thanks.
So I first came across the term slow violence in a reading we did a few weeks ago, by Rob Nixon, and the title of the book is Slow Violence and Environmentalism with the Poor, and it's published in 2011. So I actually wrote down his definition just because I felt like it gave a good background to what it is. Just I feel like it describes it the best. So by slow violence, he means a violence that occurs gradually and out of sight, a violence of delayed destruction that is dispersed across time and space, an attritional violence that is typically not viewed as violence at all. So, first off, like, not to do with Leitrim, it kind of just struck me, it made me think a lot about the situation just with how we view Africa, and the reading referenced that a lot, and kind of it just gave me a word to describe, I suppose, like how we view Africa as there's not a lot of media attention, people don't know that much about it, yet there's so many struggles happening there. And then I thought about Leitrim. So when we went there, it just, you could see that there wasn't a lot of media attention. There's obviously a really small population. There's a small electorate, so they don't have a big voice. And it just struck me that it is a violence, but it's being concealed so well, especially by like the likes of kind of greenwashing campaigns. So when I initially started studying this, I was shocked because when Louise started telling us about, you know, afforestation stuff, my initial reaction was like, oh, but trees are good for the environment. Like, I don't understand why this is a bad thing. So it made me kind of question what I'd been hearing a lot more. Like, it made me think about like even things like paper companies or toilet roll companies. Like, how many ads do you see that are saying, oh, you know, we're planting all these trees and you think you're doing good and whatever. So like what's going on at the moment is basically Ireland obviously has a really bad climate record in terms of an EU context, and they're trying to offset their carbon emissions. So when you hear of trees being planted, you're like, oh, that makes sense. But obviously that's not the case at all. And I think the thing about slow violence is, I think nowadays when we think about violence, we think of one like singular catastrophic destructive event, you know, obviously the likes of what's going on in Ukraine at the moment, and we're constantly being shown images around the world of like really disastrous things happening, and I think that's how we view something as violent. But yet there's a you go to Leitrim and you see a clearfelled site and the landscape is completely obliterated, but for some reason this isn't seen as violent as other things that go on in other parts of the world. And I think it's because it's been happening for so long that people don't see it as destructive, and I think that's why slow violence as a concept is really important. To see, like, even though this has been happening in Leitrim for years, this doesn't mean it's right or not as destructive as other things we see. And I think as well, in geography, I'd never come across the term, and I don't think we acknowledge it enough when we're describing certain events. And in the Nixon reading as well, he was kind of talking about how do we make these issues important when they're like spectacle deficient? That there might not necessarily be this one big event that marks what's going on in Leitrim, but there are certainly places like the clearfelled sites that are very destructive, but people just don't seem to be paying attention to. So I think that's why slow violence kind of took a big part of my essay. And then along with that, sacrifice zones is something that I kind of identified. So again, this is one of our readings to our class, and we kind of studied sacrifice zones in the context of like American towns. So I have another definition about sacrifice zones, and they're zones that are viewed as expendable when it comes to the environment, population, and health. So basically, they're kind of just abandoned, and people don't see them as like as significant. And I actually found a quote from Marianne Harkin, who was an independent TD, who reiterated what a senior EU official had said about Leitrim, and they described County Leitrim as a national sacrifice zone for a sika spruce. So that kind of just kind of sums it up basically. It's not even just me bringing it into my essay, like Leitrim is basically seen as a sacrifice zone. And it's just like realizing that just because a county has a small population, or that it's miles and miles away from Dublin, like a centre of political power, doesn't mean that it's not important. So yeah, that I feel sacrifice zones and slow violence were kind of the best way to describe what's going on with the sika spruce plantations.
Yeah, you've just explained and described them really well, I think. And I think one of the things that's really useful about how you've used both of those concepts together is that one, slow violence is concerned mostly with temporal scales. So it's this idea of slowness or a kind of a chronic violence that happens over long periods of time. And then sacrifice zones is obviously more explicitly a spatial concept. It's about thinking about particular spaces and places that are abandoned. And so bringing those two together to think about what's happening in Leitrim is both happening over a long period of time and as a result not being as sort of spectacular or media friendly. And then on the other hand, the need to you also really think about Leitrim. And obviously the fact that it is seen as kind of expendable is not just plucked out of thin air. There's also a much longer history of that, which I know that you were aware of. So I wonder if we could talk a little bit more specifically then about, the kinds of slow violence that you heard about or have read about regarding the Sitka spruce plantations and the people, the communities who live adjacent to them or near them, because I think, like you said at the beginning, most people think about forests. They think, they're grand, they're trees, they're green. In the same way that people think about wind turbines, I think, they're seen as kind of majestic and, they're silent. Who'd be bothered about a wind turbine or a forest? But you obviously saw and heard about different things. So maybe you could talk a bit about that.
I suppose I kind of describe like maybe what struck me on the trip. So obviously I'd never been in Leitrim before, and the journey into it was amazing because it was such a different landscape, like completely different to any other part of Ireland I'd been in. So it was really nice to see like the natural beauty before we started seeing the kind of the plantations and things like that. So I suppose we started in Kilty Clogher and we met Joe and Ciarán, who work at the Kilty Clogher Heritage Centre, and they kind of gave us an introduction, and then they brought us along this heritage walk where we crossed the border into Northern Ireland, into Fermanagh, and it was to a site that had been Caerfelled by a Scottish company pretty recently. So there was a digger there, and it was just like, I think for me the biggest thing that's stood out was just a lack of respect. Like the road that we walked up was like a public road, like a road up to someone's house, and it was completely destroyed. Like our shoes were all mucky, and like it just, I took a few pictures as well. It was just, digger trails, muck, dirt, like it was just completely destroyed. And I think the community had been told that that wouldn't happen, but yet it did, and nothing was being done about it. And then the actual Caerfelled site was just awful. And I had read, so for Louise's class, I'd been writing about the social and environmental impacts of the afforestation for the brochure. And I had been reading a paper that was published by UCD by Dr. Áine Ní Gualtháin, and there was a few other authors. It was published in 2019. And they kind of interviewed locals and got like personal responses. And I remember when I was walking up there, I was thinking of like, there was a quote that I came across in the paper. And it was just a resident in Leitrim who was describing how like at 6 o'clock in the morning these big lights would be shining in to their bedroom, and without warning, and then they'd wake up to just a completely obliterated landscape. And it's just like the like injustice of it all, that I think that's what's important to note about spatial justice and injustice. It's like it's not just the ownership of the land, it's like what you're deciding to do with the land, and you're not telling the residents about it. But yeah, the Caerfelled sites were just really like impactful. And then we walked up that road and we were kind of at a height, so we were able to look down on the landscape, and they were showing us how the landscape gradually got darker because of the Sitka spruce. So you're seeing like light green, bright kind of green trees and mountains, and then all of a sudden it would just get really black. And even on the bus journey, like going from one place to the other, like you'd pass through forestry and it was just completely dark. And also the trees grow to be like more than 60 feet tall. And yeah, I suppose that's the thing to link back to, like what people think about forests and what I initially would have thought about like planting trees is really beneficial or positive. It's really not, like, and it really impacts people's mental health. And reading up about it online and in papers and stuff, people like saying how years ago they'd be able to see their neighbours and see the lights on in other houses. And obviously that's really important in terms of just feeling safe or secure in a really rural place like Leitrim. And now that they can't see that anymore. And a lot of houses are literally being enclosed by plantations friends. And when we met with some of the members of Saoi Leitrim in Manor Hamilton, we spoke to this one lady called Siobhan, and she had been speaking about her personal experience with how around 55 to 60 acres of the land around her house was to be planted. And like she had to educate herself all about the appeals process and all like this. She didn't know anything about it. And just the thought that a lot of houses have just been completely enclosed by these really dark, like ominous landscapes is really hard to think about. And I think now is an important time to mention that like what's really important to say is that like Saoi Leitrim as a group aren't against trees or aren't against nature. You know, they made sure to stress that it's just basically these trees aren't the right trees for the area. They were saying like when we were in Manor Hamilton, like we love trees, like look around us, it was all a really nice landscape. They're not against trying to fight climate change or, you know, anything like that. It's more so that this isn't the way forward. It's actually destroying the landscape rather than helping it, and it's, you know, getting rid of biodiversity. Like we learned a lot from the people we met about like various species that are just native to the area. That these trees don't aid them in any way.
There's a couple of things that came to mind. I mean, one of them is that it's not accurate to talk about them as forests, I guess. You know, they're plantations, and the kinds of language that we use around these things, even if it's unintentional, it's not exactly greenwashing, but it does give a different sense of what is happening in
Yeah,
these landscapes and
like
ecologies.
these aren't forests that like residents can walk through and bring their dog for a walk. Like that's it's
No.
the opposite of that.
And as far as I understand, they're not even forests in which other species can live or thrive. I
Yeah,
mean,
no.
they're kind of dead. They're quite dead underneath. And then the second thing came to mind is that point is really a really, really important one about how they're not against, doing things to protect the environment. And that the same is through my own work around opponents of wind farms is that. You know, the vast majority want renewable energy. They want to reduce, impact of the economy, society
And I
on
think
the environment.
it kind of shows you the flak that they're getting, that they have to keep defending themselves, that they're not against fighting climate change or not against trees. These are the kind of arguments that are being thrown at them when they try to stand up for themselves, which I think is really important to note. This is purely just trying to protect their communities, especially in a place that already deals with a lot of emigration and things like that. They just want a nice space to live, basically. And I don't think that's a lot to ask for.
No. And another thing I was going to ask you about was that, the slow violence you've linked to the kind of effects of the plantations in terms of there's the clear felling, but also things like, I think it's worth saying the kind of everyday disruptions of things like the roads not being managed and, things not being done the way they were supposed to. That is a kind of a stress, that you've, but then there's also the thing that you mentioned about the planning. And I think that that was an interesting thing that came back from a few of you who went on the field trip is the point that was made to you about how difficult it is
Yeah, it
for
takes
individuals,
years.
to learn about this very complex planning system, to lodge appeals. And maybe you could say something about that and, how that is also part of the kind of layers of slow violence.
Yeah, that's no, that is a good point. Like I actually hadn't thought about it. Like that is a type of slow violence, you know, not educating people in the area. That's not an accident. Like, you know, if you're a forester and you're gonna go in and asks or tells someone that you want to plant in the area, you don't want them knowing the actual effects of it because you're not going to get away with it then. And I suppose that's why the whole situation is so difficult, because there's such a tight time frame in which you can appeal a decision or make an observation, that you have to be on your best game in terms of educating yourself. And even like I can't remember the woman's name who we spoke to, but at the end, this lady from Saoi Leitrim was saying like we don't want to be spending all this time, you know, all these years that we could be doing nice things, is what she said. You know, like it's not only the appeals process, but it's the years and years of research and education and looking for documents and protesting. Like it's emotionally distressing for the people living there, and I think it is important to note that that is a part of slow violence as well. It's not just the clear felled sites, it's the emotional toll it has on people. Which I think is now being discussed a bit more when you look at articles on Save Leitrim and just the situation in general, it's great to hear from people on the ground, or even in papers like the one published by UCD about the socio-economic impacts. Like, there were the person who was talking about, you know, the big industrial lights shining in the morning was saying that it was really emotionally distressing and that they had considered moving away because it had been so stressful. So yeah, that is a part of slow violence as well, definitely.
And maybe it's also worth saying that, because Save Leitrim is the name of the campaign against the plantations, but you also, well, maybe you did or maybe you didn't, I'm not sure, but there have been other campaigns, you know, within Leitrim. The original one, I guess, was Love Leitrim, which was against fracking in Leitrim, which was successful in stopping that. And then you also now have, most recently, Treasure Leitrim, which is about stopping gold mining. And I wonder if you could say something about how, you know, thinking about the broader, I guess the broader kind of tools of a spatial justice or spatial injustice approach. Like, why is it that Leitrim is this, you know, place that is, you know, burdened with these extractive industries, which are, you know, not good for, you know, many of the people who live there, the communities, they don't really benefit from them. Like, why is that? How could you compare that to, I mean, I know you talked about Africa earlier, but thinking about other kinds of, I guess.
I mean, it's a big question. I don't know why Leitrim is being targeted. But I suppose, like, I think it's kind of like the points I made earlier. It's a really small county, a really small electorate, just complete lack of media attention. It's on the border. It's miles away from kind of the major cities of Ireland. Like, those are the only things I can think of. Like, I know a lot of people, we kind of, at the start of the trip, Louise and Mary Gilmartin, who accompanied us on the trip, were kind of saying, we come up with like one word to describe what we thought Leitrim was, or a comment. And a lot of people had been kind of talking about like how they didn't really, you know, even the bus driver made a silly comment about, oh, why would you want to go to Leitrim? This kind of thing. And that had been kind of the narrative we had all had, not in a mean way, but like, we just, you know, if someone had been there, it was just because they were passing through on the way to Donegal or something like that. So I think that's, it's just the general rhetoric that had been there maybe before. I don't really think it's a question I can answer specifically in terms of why extractive industries are targeting Leitrim, but the only thing I can put it down to is just, you know, lack of media attention, a small population. I think also it kind of makes you think about the Mica situation in Donegal. Like, a lot of people were making the point that if this was happening in Dublin, this would have been dealt with years ago, or it wouldn't have happened in the first place. I think it kind of links a lot back to like politics of power and stuff. Like, if this had happened in Cork City, or, well, not Cork City, Cork County or Dublin County or Galway County, I think you would have heard about it by now. It's just a national attitude. I don't know how to describe it specifically, but maybe it's just
how places are understood and represented within the kind of the mainstream,
a national kind of rhetoric
discourse. Exactly And I think that is a thing that Save Leitrim and Love Leitrim have been so effective at trying to challenge, is that, you know, these are
and
not...
I think even hearing them speak about how much their home place meant to them was, like, really impactful, because, you know, we all go back about our day-to-day lives or where we're from, we're proud of where we're from, and yet because they have such a small population, it's not every day you meet someone, you know, in Maynooth who's from Leitrim or in Dublin who's from Leitrim. So I think just to hear that basically they just want to... They love Leitrim, they love the surrounds, they just want to be able to enjoy it, they don't want to have to move, they don't want young people to have to move if they don't want to. I think that's important to think about.
Yeah, and I guess, because we're running out of getting to the end anyway, and I think one last point I wanted you to maybe comment on, and I think you already have indirectly, is often these sort of localized objections by communities, you know, often not that many people, and they don't have resources, as you said, are quite easily dismissed as being NIMBY. And it's particularly in the context of environmental projects or green projects, so whether it's plantations, which are about carbon sequestration, or whether they're about wind farms, which are about renewable energy. But I think what you've described today would push back against that. And I wonder what you would say, say if you were at a Christmas dinner or something, or you were some and you're in a pub, and it's a common thing, especially for people not from these places. So if you're in Cork or Dublin, and they'd say, "Oh, those, pesky folk up in Leitrim, blocking this stuff. What, why are they so bothersome?" Like, what would your response be? How would you
Yeah, I
respond to that?
suppose it's like what I was saying earlier. Like, they're so adamant, Save Leitrim, that like this isn't about a not in my backyard argument. Like, they are all for, like, one of the women from Save Leitrim runs an eco business. Like, they are all for helping the environment, and they're so for protecting their biodiversity and protecting their landscape, that it's not a simple thing. They're not saying, no, we don't want it, sure, shove it down in Dublin. They're not saying that at all. They're not saying put it somewhere else. They're saying this shouldn't be happening, full stop. And they're just trying to highlight that it's not as simple as we don't want it in Leitrim. They're saying that it's actually impacting the environment. You're doing the opposite of what you're telling people. Even in the case of wind turbines, like, they were telling us about how if they were going to put these wind turbines up on the mountain, they would have to wreck the roads, knock the wall off a community centre. For what? The wind turbines only have a certain lifespan. Is it really worth it to do all that damage to the environment for how many years of a wind turbine working? So I think it's just really important to note that it's not, we have to listen to these communities. Like, just because a government says one thing doesn't mean we all have to go along with it. It's about educating yourself and actually seeing the impacts. Like, none of us would want to be living with what they're living with. And I think it's just really important that people listen to them and value their opinion. Because it is a really tough system that they're fighting against, and I really honestly commend them for their community spirit and, like, getting through it, because they're doing tremendous work to save their community, essentially.
Yeah, that's really well said. And I think that point at the end you said about, none of us would want to live with these things, and none of us should have to live with these things. Like, there must be other ways of trying to deal with the obviously very big and urgent climate crises and biodiversity crises, but this isn't the only way. And I think that's really well said. So thanks so much, Isabel. That was it was really insightful. And I think for anyone who doesn't know much about the Sitka spruce plantations and what's going on in Leitrim, I think they'll learn a lot from what you've said. And I think they should definitely check out what Save Leitrim are doing and what Treasure Leitrim are doing with the
Yeah,
gold mining.
definitely.
And so thanks for sharing your time, and best of luck with your thesis and
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
all your further studies.
Thank you.